After I zip open my tent, I walk down to the banks of the Apalachicola River. It's 6 in the morning. On the other side, it's 5 in the morning. This is a dividing line between the central and eastern time zones. I'm wearing gloves, a scarf, and a woolly hat. Yesterday when we woke up, it was 29 degrees. Not the kind of weather you typically expect camping in Florida. This is more like icicles on the Apalachicola. The camp is beginning to stir. Fire is getting ready. And breakfast is starting to be made.
And I think we got some oatmeal, some granola, some cheese grits, and more coffee. That's it.
Expedition leader Mallory likes dim. It warms her hands by the fire.
It took me a while to warm up. I was still in my paddling pants and had been by the fire, and it was a marked difference. I had my summer weight bag with me over my other one. Mm-hmm. The last couple nights, and I had to find it last night and pull it over my head. I'm like, where is that one? Why did not lock in this part of cold? And then, of course, you get hot, and then you undo.
We started the day before in the Dead Lakes in the middle of the Panhandle. It got the name from a time when the Chipola River was blocked up by sediment, causing the water level to rise, killing even the hardy cypress trees.
And there are a lot of stumps or skeletons of former cypress trees, as well as live cypress trees that we go through. You'll see ospreys nesting in the tops of some of them, and it's just a really kind of eerie, interesting landscape that now seems to be, favorite of fishermen and other recreationists who come here.
This place is littered with names that would make a graveyard shiver. Dead Lakes, Bloody Bluff, the River Styx, and it's next to a state forest called Tate's Hell. David Morse of Apalachicola Riverkeeper, a nonprofit conservation group, says Tate was a farmer who got stuck in the swamp chasing a panther that had killed some of his livestock.
And while he was in that swamp tracking that panther, he got himself in a lot of trouble. He lost his shoe, got bit by a water moccasin, and got himself thoroughly lost and stumbled around in there for about 5 days or so and completely lost. And when he came out, he was down near Caribel and collapsed. And people asked him, "Well, Mr. Tate, where have you been?" And he said, "I have been in hell."
We have 24 miles to go today, so got to soak up as much heat and comfort as possible before we get to the more open water.
Expedition photographer and founder Carlton Ward Jr. paddles a little quicker to keep warm.
The first day on the Apalachicola, I saw bald eagle. I saw a female white-tailed deer right down on the sandbar. I saw a bunch of wild hogs off in the bushes. And aside from that, we're seeing quite a bit of bird life here in the Dead Lakes. There's a beautiful osprey nest we'll pass in a little bit where they're actively building the nest and seem to have some fledgling age chicks in there.
This place is so isolated, we passed under only one bridge in 50 miles. We end our trip on a ferocious headwind crossing the miles-wide Apalachicola floodplain as it drains into the Gulf of Mexico. Apalachicola has the feel of one of those end-of-the-earth towns you can still run across in Florida. After all, they call this the Forgotten Coast. It prospered in the 1800s on cypress logged on the vast Apalachicola River floodplain and cotton shipped down from Georgia. Its claim to fame was one John Gorey, who invented the first artificial cooling system. That eventually led to the first air conditioner. So in a way, this little port city pretty much invented modern Florida. Gorey died penniless, and pretty soon the cypresses were logged out. A railroad built to Savannah took care of the cotton. Pretty much all that was left in Apalachicola were the oysters. And with its weather-beaten wharves of shucking houses and mounds of discarded shells, it still feels that way. The Apalachicola is different than the rest of Florida's rivers. It starts in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains in Georgia, where it's called the Chattahoochee. It merges with the Flint River, where Alabama, Georgia, and Florida meet. And all those people upstream have created somewhat of a crisis hundreds of miles to the south. So much water was withdrawn from the river system that there were mass killings of oysters in 2007 and 2012.
The salinity in the bay was so high for so long that the oyster population essentially crashed. It wasn't just the oysters, though. The shrimp harvest, the flounder, crabs, everything was just devastated.
Dan Tonsmeyer with Apalachicola Riverkeeper says the fisheries have somewhat recovered since then, but there are only going to be more straws in the water. Upstream, metropolitan Atlanta keeps growing, and Tonsmeyer says agriculture uses 2 to 3 times the water that's used in Atlanta.
And during the droughts, those dry periods, those are the critical times that we need to share the pain so all the burden of the drought doesn't wind up being placed on the fishermen and the species of the Apalachicola floodplain.
Lawyers and judges have been hashing this out for decades, reaching all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. But attorneys for Georgia said in a motion last week the case should be dismissed because the federal government controls water flowing through the Jim Woodruff Dam on the state line. So even this isolated wilderness can't escape the ravages of man. Steve Newborn, WUSF, 89.7 News.
Support for Florida Wildlife Corridor Expedition Reports comes from the Community Foundation of Tampa Bay.